Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com. This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands.
Well, time check. It's just about going 17:44 by my clock. If you've just joined us, welcome to what's left of the third and final hour of the Home Run on Chai FM. .com. Well, 101.9, of course it's chaifm.com. 101.9, Chai FM. I'm Michael McKenna, standing in for Simon Anstey. It's great to be back with you. Joining us now on the line, we welcome Anthony Reich, our reporter from Israel, to bring us the Israel Report. Anthony, good afternoon to you, and thanks for joining us, and over to you.
Tzoraim tovim, good afternoon. Nice to talk to you, Michael, and nice to be here in the afternoon. Of course, the Australia story still dominates the news, and sure, that is of no surprise to anybody. And the question about how Israel is or is not involved in that story continues to permeate news items. And of course, the interesting piece that I've picked up from earlier today is that Australian Prime Minister Albanese has claimed that Australia's recognition of a Palestinian state is completely unconnected to the events that took place in Sydney yesterday, our time. And I just wonder how much people really believe that, because I still am of the view that the Australian government's response to the war in Israel, the Australian government's clear support of a Palestinian state, which that statement really was less about supporting a Palestinian state and more about being critical of Israel and supporting Hamas, because as we all know, there was no Palestinian state to support. And so the idea of a Palestinian state and the rise of a Palestinian state might well be relevant, but not right now, because it's not available. It's not something that is realistic and on the cards as we stand. So the act of standing up and supporting something which really didn't require them to support it because it wasn't really on the agenda at all,
right,
does raise questions about what the intention was and how that links to this tragedy, this massacre that unfolded in Sydney. And as I say, I'm firmly of the view that it had an impact of emboldening anti-Israeli, anti-Jewish sentiment in Australia, the Australian government standing up and supporting a Palestinian state, which effectively was a statement against Israel, an anti-Jewish and anti-Zionistic statement, has undoubtedly, in my humble opinion, emboldened people in Israel who are anti-Jewish. And we've seen that with the protests and the Sydney Harbour Bridge being decorated with Palestinian flags. All of that is much less about support of the Palestinian people and much more about anti-Israeli sentiment and, by extension, anti-Jewish sentiment. So that's my take of the situation, and I'm happy to see that communities are coming together in support of those in Australia. My condolences go to those families who've lost people in Australia, and refuah shlema to those who are injured, and they should all recover and be able to return back to their lives. But right now, the Jewish world is injured, not only Australia, and Israelis are very, very injured, and there are no Israelis who are not talking about the events of Australia. So we all feel very, very connected to what happened, and very shocked, deeply shocked by the events of yesterday.
You know, Anthony, reflecting on what transpired yesterday, and also you see this radicalism encroaching in other parts of the world, do you think now that this has now finally served as a wake-up call to global leadership as to what is transpiring here and what needs to be arrested to deal with this once and for all, and now in terms of this suddenly dawning upon them that this is a reality you're facing?
In my wildest dreams, Michael, it is a wake-up call. In the reality, though, I've said this numerous times in my discussions with Howard over the months and over the years, I don't think that people are open enough to be convinced away from the current point of view that they hold. People seem to be so firmly entrenched in whatever they think and believe, either for or against. I think that there's a very, very narrow middle ground, if anything. And therefore, I think that those entrenched positions are not really ones that can be altered. As much as I would like to think that this is a wake-up call and that people might come to a realization that, you know, this could potentially happen in many other parts of the world, I'm afraid I'm a little too cynical to believe that this really will be a wake-up call. But I hope that I'm wrong, because really there is a wake-up call that's needed.
Indeed. Anthony, is there anything you'd like to touch on to, anything you'd like to bring to mind, anything you'd like to elaborate on?
Well, I'd like to tell listeners about this really amazing operation that was carried out by the IDF on Saturday, which resulted in the elimination of the Hamas number two person, Ra'ad Saad. Now, he is a person who has been connected in the senior leadership role with Hamas for many, many years. He's considered to be one of the main architects of the October the 7th massacre. He's clearly someone who has been tracked over the course of the last 2 years during the war with Gaza. Okay. And he seems to have somehow managed to maintain his safety by staying in the tunnels underground, which is a much, much safer place away from prying eyes of Israeli drones. But that moment came to an end on Saturday when an Israeli drone very, very clinically hit the car that he was driving in. Mm-hmm. And there's a fascinating account of the story of that elimination, which comes from Captain A, who is a 26-year-old Air Force drone operator. As I say, he's a captain in the IDF, and he began his shift on Saturday, as he says, in a very routine operational manner. He says I was flying around. He talks about the drone that he operates in the first person, as if though he is actually in the drone, but clearly he's not in the drone, he's just controlling it. And he says that he was flying around the area of Khan Yunis, where two Israeli soldiers had been lightly wounded earlier in the day by an explosive device. And during the time that he was assisting the ground forces in Khan Yunis, he was suddenly called away and received a change of mission. And as he says, he was called away within minutes to leave the area and to fly north, west of Gaza City, in order, as he says, to eliminate Ra'ad Saad. He had no prior warning that this was coming his way. It was just a momentary opportunity that arose. Clearly, Saad had been tracked by the intelligence for some time. Mm-hmm. He says that not only had the intelligence from the air detected that Saad was above ground, but indeed there was word on the ground that Saad had been spotted, and that he was traveling in a Skoda Jeep in a neighborhood that had been seen relatively limited fighting up until that moment. The Israeli drones, we are told, were already monitoring his vehicle. But when Captain A's unmanned drone was assigned to carry out the strike, he says that he managed to lock in on the car and fire very, very precisely. And ultimately, what we know now is that only those people who were actually in that vehicle were actually harmed in any way, including Saad himself, of course. And Hamas have now come out to acknowledge not only that Saad was killed, but have acknowledged his role in what carried on the massacre of October the 7th, the planning, the execution of all of that. And so very few tears were shed in Israel with the elimination of Ra'ad Saad. Captain A said that he spoke with his teammates about feeling really proud and satisfied that they'd finally managed to eliminate Saad. And then, as he says, He went home to Tel Aviv, he ate a hamburger, and he sat with some friends and he watched soccer on TV as if he would do at the end of any shift, which I find quite fascinating, the way he managed to just pick up, leave his shift as a drone operator and go home to watch soccer or to hang out with his friends. So that was the elimination of Ra'ad Saad. The other thing which I think may be of interest to listeners is the fact that Israel has re-established diplomatic relations with Bolivia. Now,
Okay.
on the face of it, Bolivia doesn't really sound like the most important country to have diplomatic relations with. But when it comes to votes at the United Nations and when it comes to support in the international community, any friend is a good friend. Anybody that you can somehow harness to be on your side, to be on your team, to see things from your point of view, I think is always a good thing. And this is true as well with Bolivia, where Israel has sort of had on and off relations with Bolivia, depending on who's been in government. It's interesting that when the left-wing party has been in government in Bolivia, that they have broken off relations with Israel. And now that a right-wing president has been returned to Bolivia, the diplomatic ties have been restored. And in fact, Prime Minister Netanyahu did speak over the phone last week with the Bolivian President Rodrigo Paz. He actually even invited him to come and to visit Israel. And of course, Bolivia will certainly be the recipient of positive things, Israeli technology, Israeli goods and services, access to Israeli intelligence, other military hardware that might come their way as a result of reestablishing
Sure.
diplomatic relations with Bolivia. So I think that that's good news. And
Okay.
it's interesting that also we've seen elections in Chile, which have also returned a right-wing government. So overall in South America, the winds of change are blowing across South America, and apparently right-wing governments are all the rage and really managing to somehow get the upper hand in South America. So
Sure.
those, I think, are the interesting things for the day. Unless there's anything else that somebody else wishes to raise, some questions which you may have, but those are the things that I've hoped to talk to the listeners about today.
Okay, Anthony, we can always continue this conversation. I will be on the home run again tomorrow, but we have to leave it there. Anthony, thank you so much for joining us on the home run and looking forward to our conversation tomorrow. Anthony Wright, correspondent and journalist, reporting to us and bringing us today's Israel report. I just want to recap on an event happening later now. Ruth, you have asked, where is this happening? So it does mention at the end the South African Jewish Board of Deputies and Kosher World. So perhaps Google that and look it up, because I'm just reading the script that I've been given. But let's recap on that. So unite with Joburg Jewry at 6:30 this evening as we show up for Sydney, standing in solidarity with our brothers and sisters in Australia. We will light the second candle of Hanukkah, demonstrating our solidarity with the Sydney community. Together, we will bring light at this time of darkness. The Australian Acting High Commissioner and United States Charge d'Affaires will bring messages of support. A recap once again, the event at 6:30 this evening is hosted by Chabad, the South African Jewish Board of Deputies, and Kosher World. Perhaps look up their sites. I'm sure they will elaborate and give you further details as to where the venue is.